Hello and welcome to season 3 of Mum's Work and Chaos. We all know the saying, it takes a village to raise a child, but where is that village? Well, I started this podcast to help you find yours, and I'm joined by some amazing guests this season, talking about subjects such as fast fashion, menopause, sex education, and teenage behaviour, just to name a few. So join me this season, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Mum's Work and Chaos. This week, I am joined by Marisol, otherwise known as the Sex Ed Mum. Now, I find sex education, anything to do with talking about sex, really cringy. And that's how I was brought up. It was sort of like shoved under a rug. We didn't talk about it until it was absolutely necessary. It was left to school to handle it. You know, the joy of putting condoms on cucumbers and all of that jazz. But Marisol is here to help break away the chains of cringe and help us to deal with talking about sex and sex education at home. Welcome, Marisol.
Thank you so much, Louise. Yes, I think everything that you've been saying sounds really, you know, it's quite common. And I hopefully we can make this episode really interesting and engaging, and also kind of demystify all those things around sex education and just make it a bit more approachable and more fun for parents. My name is Marisol, for everyone who's listening, and I am a sex educator. I work mainly with young people, 9 to 24, around sex education. I'm a mom as well, so I kind of see firsthand, and, you know, learn as well from my own experience. And I'm also a coach, so I coach parents everything around relationships and sex education and how to handle those conversations.
Yeah, I mean, like, sex education starts from such a young age anyway. I mean, I guess a lot of parents wouldn't even think of, you know, their toddlers asking how babies are made as a sex education question, but it is, isn't it? So I guess that kind of leads me to my first question, which is, when should we start talking about all of this stuff? Like, what age is the right age to start talking to our children about sex?
It's a couple of things on that question. When is the first time, the best time, today or yesterday? And it doesn't matter how old your child is, but I think the second part to that question is, we are already educating. We educate the whole time. We educate with our silence, with our giggles, when we don't answer that a question because it's not age appropriate.
Yeah.
So we are giving that message. I think the question is more how we can make sex education more conscious, how we can share the information we want to share, how we can share the values that we want to share with our children. And I think that, you know, that takes, you know, it needs us to stop for a second, think about what type of sex education we have received in the past and what we want our children to learn, you know, and, you know, see how we can get all those skills or the information that we need to actually educate our children the way we want them to be educated around sex education. So we are already doing that, is, you know, how we can give good and valuable information to them.
I think it's so difficult though, isn't it? I mean, like, I've been hanging around your Instagram page for a while. It's just such a fun place to be. You know, your beautiful bright colours for your branding and everything, and the way you broach topics as well is just so friendly and easy to absorb, and it makes you feel comfortable. But I think that's part of the problem. We're very uptight. We've been brought up to be uptight, and so actually, like, trying to be open about this stuff is really difficult, and especially with your children. I guess, like, I've seen on your page as well, you know, people asking questions like, but
talking about it, doesn't it encourage it? Like by actually being open about it and talking about sex, aren't we just encouraging our children to be more sexual?
Well, we tend to think that sex education is around how to have sex. And, yes, there could be a part of around how to do it and how to prevent STIs or pregnancies and things like that. But that's, you know, we're going to have those conversations at a certain age. Sex education is much more than that. It's about learning around our bodies, our genitals or private parts. It's around learning our own consent. It's about learning about healthy relationships. It's learning about pleasure. You know, all those things are parts of sex education. So it can be intimidating. I get that, but I also, and I appreciate you share that feedback about the Instagram page, because I do try to make it fun so parents can make it fun as well. Everyone who has children knows that the best way to connect with your children is through humor and games. And, you know, if you just try to sit down and have a lecture with your child, regardless their age, really, it's not going to work. So the more engaging and the more fun that we can make it, the more chances we've got to share that message with them as well.
I think it's just so difficult though, isn't it? Like, knowing where to start. Like, I just, even like explaining how, well, talking about how babies are made, they always catch you off guard with that question, don't they? It's like while you're trying to do something, or like they see a baby while you're out and you're strapping them into the car, and then you're like, oh, I'll talk to you about it later. Like, we're not gonna talk about this right now.
But that's absolutely, that's really good. But have the conversation.
Yeah.
So, and I think that we I mean, I'm guilty of that as well. Like, leave them hanging with a question, because if they got a question, it means that they're curious. And if they don't find the question, they don't find the answer from us, they're going to try to find the answer.
Yeah.
Somewhere. And we know that we got the right information for them, or at least we probably got more skills to actually find that information if we don't have it. So it is fine to say to them, look, this is not a good time to answer the question or to talk about that, but make sure that you do have the conversation later on.
How would,
because you don't want them to have that feeling that this is something that we cannot talk about as well.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's the thing, isn't it? You don't want them to feel like they can't come to you. And I think it's such a divisive area, isn't it? Like, yes, it's cringy, but equally you want your kids to be able to come to you if they've got a problem. And by not answering those simple, smaller questions, we're allowing those blockades to go up, and then they'll find the answer some way. It just won't be through you. So, like, how would you go about answering that? Like, I don't, you know, I've done the whole mummy's got an egg, daddy's got a sperm, they come together, they make a baby kind of thing.
and that's fantastic. And I think we really need to think about the age of our children. And I always say, use the accurate scientific information. So provide that kind of information in a simple way. So eggs and sperm, you know, that's absolutely fine. You can talk, that is a seed called sperm. You can talk about bodies getting together. You can say that this is something that adults do, so they actually understand that this is an adult thing, and it's not something that children should do. You can talk about the body. You can talk penises into vaginas. You can talk about those things. You can talk about menstruation and what does it mean for people to menstruate.
Yeah.
So you can link all those conversations. But you will have to, through the time, you're going to add more and more information. I'm sure you all have that experience of your child asking you a question, and 2 seconds later, they lost interest. All right. That's the time when you have to stop. And that's fine. They got their, you know, they got the answer they needed.
Yeah.
They're going to ask that question later. you know, maybe a few months later or maybe a year later, and then add a little bit more information. Children are really good at telling you when they had enough. So try to give information. They are really good, you know, like, so try to give that information, and when they have enough, that's fine. And if the information maybe was a bit too much in terms of they didn't really understand something, they're going to ask you that question again.
Yeah.
But I think we need to kind of stop being afraid of sharing too much information. Of course, you're not going to tell a toddler, you're not going to talk about oral sex, for example, to a toddler. but you can talk about an intimate time between, you know, people. You can talk about pleasure. You can say, you know, adults do those things also to have pleasure and to enjoy themselves and to connect and to, you know, be intimate with each other. And also that activity might, you know, they can make babies throughout that activity as well. But using scientific language, I think is definitely always the way to go.
Yeah, we had some fun at school recently. My daughter's in year three now, and in year two they did a PSHE lesson, and they came home and they'd been learning about the body, and so they'd learnt the scientific word for vagina and penis and so on, and but I just thought it was really funny the way the different parents within the class took their children learning these terms. And there was parents like me who was like, eh, you know, they're going to learn the terms anyway, they should already know them, like, you know, I don't really understand the necessity for calling things like a lady's vagina a fufu or a nunny and all of that sort of stuff. Why give it a pet name? Just call it what it is. And so I took that sort of stance, you know, that's what it's called. Why are we worried about them learning these words? And then others were like, oh, well, I feel like there should have been a letter that came home to like at least pre-warn us. Like, pre-warn you about what? They're learning words. They're just words in the English language that define body parts. And then someone else wrote in saying, well, now my toddler knows it. And she's just spent the last 10 minutes running around the back garden shouting vagina at the top of her house. That's just, that was really funny. But the way the parents took it was like, it was very different. Very, you know, it was two ends of the spectrum. Some were up in arms about them learning these words. And I was more of the opinion that they are words. They are scientific words and our children should learn them anyway. It's just one of those things, isn't it? Like, everyone takes the whole experience differently.
Absolutely.
And the way their children are educated differently. And I suppose, yeah, it's just the way people do it, isn't it? So, I mean, you know, school covers quite a lot of the whole sex ed thing, doesn't it? But again, like, they've done a PSHE lesson in year two about names, body part names and things like that. But like, my recollection of sex education was like bare minimum. Mostly we watched a video in year six, and then we went to secondary school and we had a PSHE lesson about it, and we got taught how to put a condom on a cucumber, and that was it.
Or a banana, and that's the other alternative, yeah.
Yeah, I think cucumbers were probably less expensive. And then we were just sent off into the world, not really knowing much, not really understanding anything. And also, like, I felt like, you know, our understanding of ways to prevent pregnancy were just condoms, and that was it. And it was that was the only option we were sort of like given an understanding about. And no understanding of how to, you know, approach your GP or go to a sexual health clinic, or the fact that there shouldn't be a stigma or any taboo about going to a sexual health clinic. It's not all STIs and tests and things. And I felt like it was really poor and lacking, my experience anyway. I don't know how it's moved on since then, but I'm guessing probably not much.
Depends. It depends. It really depends on the school. And you say something really interesting, because I think we tend to wait for school to talk about those things. And we got two problems in there. You were talking about your own child learning about body parts in year three. This is a conversation that ideally should happen when they are toddlers, when they start, you know, maybe when you changing their nappies, or when they're having a bath, and you can, you know, just use the names. You know, you have a penis, or you got a vulva, just clean your vulva, clean the labia. So you, those are conversations that toddlers should know, mainly because it is their own body. They got the right to know. The same thing they know, they got an arm or a head or legs, they should know that this is a part of the body. By using those terms, we are actually removing any stigma. We need to understand that for us adults, genitals have a sexual connotation.
Yeah.
You know, it is like that. For them, it doesn't, not just yet, not particularly at that age. And they need to understand the majority of the time we use our genitals to go to the loo. And, you know, all the things that is non-sexual, really. Everyone, yeah. Right? So they need to know about their bodies. It's about empowering them, but also give them the skills to not only understand their body and how it works and what their names are, because we tend to, you know, head, shoulders, knees and toes. We completely avoid that area there, don't we? Like, that area is completely non-existent. And they start wondering why, you know, maybe not conscious, but they will start wondering why we don't talk about those terms and why we don't name those parts. But also it's a really, really good skill to have in terms of prevention when it comes to sexual abuse. You said like I think every mm-hmm. family uses completely different, you know, different names for the genitals, whether it's the cookie or whether it's the from bottom, whatever it is. And if a child is going to a trusted adult to have that conversation if there is any situation of sexual abuse. Sometimes, it, you know, we think about sexual abuse and we're thinking about an adult and a child. It might be to children, but if they don't have the language to actually communicate that, the teacher might think, oh, what flower means? You know, they're not really sure what that might mean. So we are actually, we're actually putting an obstacle for them to talk about those things. So we are empowering them. And you know, the other thing you were saying is in terms of school, it's probably better now. Yes, in some ways it is. There is a curriculum now that schools have to deliver, which is good. It was implemented 3 years ago. So realistically, it's still in the process for many schools to actually adapt the content. But also that same curriculum says that the prime educators are parents. So, you know, the government already insists that prime educators are parents when it comes to relationships and sex. So we cannot wait. And we don't know, some schools might teach in different ways. They might talk about certain things in year three or year six. We cannot wait for schools to deliver that thing, because it's just so important. Everyone in their lives is going to have either relationships or sex in one way or the other. So the more conversations we have with them, the easier we're going to make them for them to have not relationships and sex, but healthy relationships and pleasurable and satisfying sexual life as well.
It's tricky, isn't it? Like, you know, the things that are out there now, you know, the advent of the internet, and I say that knowing like I grew up with dial-up you know, but the internet gives our children so much access to everything, and with them having access to smartphones and tablets and things at home as well, they're able to access so much information and probably find things that help explain the questions that they have, not realizing that they're actually watching porn and things like that as well. And I think that's, it's quite a difficult subject to talk about. Like, even as adults, porn's a very taboo subject. We, you know, you hide it, you know, even if you're in a relationship, you might watch it and you might not talk about it, and you might hide it from your partner, and so on. And it becomes a very secretive kind of thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How do we broach that with our children? How do we talk to our children about how unrealistic videos like that are, and how they can't, you know, because I mean, like, as a woman, you see some of the stuff and you're just like, that's scary. That's some scary shit right there. That doesn't look loving. That doesn't look kind and friendly and nice or pleasurable in any way. And then if your child, a girl, sees something like that, how do you explain to them and to your sons that is completely unrealistic and it shouldn't be mirrored? It's so difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the answer to that is we don't necessarily have to talk about pornography by talking about pornography.
Yeah.
We need to, yes, of course, we can have the conversation of you're going to see, you might find things on the internet that might be upsetting, might be very explicit, might be adult content. You can talk about how unrealistic those things are. You can just compare to other things. I mean, if you watch, I mean, there's one good example, and it's not mine, and I never remember who said that, but, you know, it's like learning to drive watching Fast and Furious. You know, we watch that film, we know that's not realistic.
Yeah.
We don't then get a car and try to drive like that. We are aware. And the problem with pornography is because we don't have those conversations, young people nowadays think that pornography is realistic, and they try to imitate because that's what they do. They are curious, they see something and they try to imitate, and they don't have other references.
Yeah.
So they're going to try to copy what they see on pornography. So we need to have those conversations. We need to explain that is 18 plus rated content, as we will do with any other type of content. We might not allow our children to watch certain things, and we will tell them, this is, you know, it's just adult content and I'm not comfortable because of violence, because of whatever reason. So we can say the same. But also the other conversations we need to have is, it is, you know, I talk so much about pleasure, but because it is, if you know what pleasure means for you, if you know what things give you pleasure, then you're less likely to then engage in sexual relationships in which you're going to try to imitate some behaviors when they're not pleasurable to you, when it doesn't feel fine. The more you know about around consent, the more you're going to identify that those situations are non-consensual, whether it is when you're watching or whether you're trying to do something that you've seen on pornography. So the more knowledge they have previously, the more critical skills they will develop in terms of understanding what type of content they will. And this is one of the things we all want to think, that our children aren't going to access pornography. Pornography, it is there. They are. So we need to, we really need to think that at some point they're going to access that content. And are they going to access that content with those critical skills around consent, healthy relationships, body image, etc.? Or they're going to access that content with no knowledge whatsoever. They're going to understand that that's actually sex or sexual relationships or relationships. Where do we want them to be? And when we ask ourselves that question, then, you know, we feel more empowered to find a way to have them.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I hadn't even really thought about how, by having conversations around like what healthy relationships look like and things like that, it then impact the way they view content like that. That's amazing. I think as well, like, you know, you don't have to just, even just stumbling around social media, it could be such an interesting place. And I think, you know, with, again, TikTok became huge during lockdown, yeah, mostly for the dances and all of the challenges and the random stuff they were doing over there. But I mean, I'm not a fan of TikTok for several reasons. One includes, you know, the number of people on there who are producing sort of like overtly sexual content, you know, specifically to send people to like their OnlyFans pages and stuff like that. And you know, teenagers and young, well, even like tweens stumbling across content like that and being drawn in, I find that very concerning. But like, if you were a parent of a teenager who had access to TikTok, it's bound to happen. It's an inevitability, isn't it? Like, someone's going to send a link to something. You know, I remember boys bringing in like The Sun and having page 3 open on their desks in the morning. And I mean, it's the digital version of page 3, isn't it, essentially? So again, like, it's just about us being open. Like, yes, you can have TikTok. I'd rather you avoided content like this. This is, you know, and basically having those conversations, isn't it? And allowing that trust.
Yeah, and this is tricky, because the more we try to stop them from doing something, the more they will want to do that. On the other hand, I have had young people saying, you know, I don't know, I remember one particular conversation from someone that said, oh, I know what the clitoris is, because I you know, I heard that on TikTok.
On TikTok.
Do you know what? Actually, it is good that they do have information. It's whether they've got the capacity to understand whether that information is good or bad. Because information is there. And, you know, the more we know, the more we can understand, all right, this info, we can, you know, we can, again, it comes back to those critical skills. It comes back to that kind of media literacy. The more we know, the more we can understand, this is realistic, this is unrealistic. They are saying this, but, you know, I've got the feeling that I read somewhere, or my mom told me, or whatever, that, you know, this is the, so you can compare that information. If you don't have those skills, you will just assume that what you're seeing is reality, you know, coming, you know, I know this is not the topic, this is like fake news, you know, if you don't have the skills to spot fake news on social media, you're just going to believe that that's true. Some people might believe it, some people might just question, because they have developed those skills and say, oh, right, I'm going to go to other sources just to compare the information. So I don't think there's anything realistic intrinsically bad about social media, but obviously they have to develop those skills for many reasons, you know, like in terms of information around body image as well, the use of filters and on all these things, that assumption that likes will or positive comment might make you have a better self-esteem. So all those are conversations that we need to have around social media. Most social medias will have an age, usually it's around 13, so they, no one under the age of 13, but obviously it changes through platforms, should be on social media in the first place. But yes, as you said, there is content that is not appropriate for them. And coming back to pornography, one of the latest research this year says that the platform where children or young people are more likely to encounter pornography was through Twitter. Well, obviously now it's not called Twitter, right? But that was the platform where young people were more likely to encounter pornography. We might have thought about setting parental controls, restricting certain apps. We might not have thought, actually, you know what, they might encounter pornography through social media. So, you know, we have to be aware, but it comes back to having those conversations again and again. Because if it's not on their own tablet, on their own phone, it's going to be on their friend's phone or whatever, they're going to access that content. So again, what information, what skills we want them to have before they access that type of content?
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Like you were saying, by giving them the means to make their own decisions and understand like the world around them and everything as well, they can then form their own opinions and do what's right for them. That I think the part of the problem is as well that it's really hard to let go as a parent.
Yeah.
And like I was talking to someone else on a different episode, like about how we were talking about getting ready for school and how hard it is as a parent when your baby goes to nursery, they need you less. When your baby goes to school and they need you less again, and then your baby goes to secondary school and they're walking to school, they're coming home on their own, they might be putting on a slice of toast and making themselves a cup of tea when they get in, and it's crazy. They just, as they get older and older and older, that bungee cord gets longer and longer and longer, doesn't it? And they come back, but it's just that, you know, it just that gap gets bigger. And I think it's really difficult as parents to realize that our children they were tiny little babies one day and then they're going to become adults the next, and they're going to make decisions and they're going to have relationships and they're going to have their own children and they have a mortgage and all the good stuff. But we need to understand that they have to have that element of, you know, space to explore and learn and grow. And I think part of it is you want to keep them close, and so you restrict them. You say, no, we can't do that. No, I want to keep your innocence for a bit longer. No, I don't want you seeing this stuff because it disturbs me. But what disturbs you doesn't disturb someone else. What you think is not good isn't bad to someone else. And it's really difficult, isn't it? So how do we keep those open lines of communication? How do we avoid restricting our children to the point where they rebel and do something that's like completely off the charts, silly? Like, what? How do we keep those conversations going and make it less cringe for us? Because I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like, even like you said earlier, just by avoiding the question sometimes, that's a restriction in itself as well. We're sort of like saying, oh, I'll talk to you about it later, and then later never comes, and it becomes a problem, doesn't it?
Yeah. And it is very important, because if you have not had those conversations with your child, they're not going to come to you, or you're not gonna be the first, you know, point in terms of, you know, asking questions.
Yeah.
When they do have questions. So the more we start those conversations, the more we're gonna make them understand, all right, I can go to mom, or I can go to dad, or I could, you know, for these type of questions. We are the ones. The same that we start many other conversations at home. We talk about, I don't know, traffic, we talk about the traffic, how to be safe on the road. When they grow up, we talk about politics, we talk about, we start those conversations. We don't expect them to come in the future and say, oh, I don't know, what does it mean when the, you know, when the traffic light is green. You know, we already anticipate those questions, you know, like we have those conversations daily. We explain those things. We don't wait for them to come to us with those questions. And with sex education, it should be exactly the same. We need to start having those conversations. I tend to talk about the 1 minute conversation, because again, I think we got that in our heads that we need to have the talk, and when is the right time? No, I'm just gonna have a sign that tells me this is the right time to have the conversation. And what happened if I make it wrong? Wrong thing, if I don't have the information. If you think about 1 minute conversation, it's something, you know, you watch something on TV, you know, something that maybe is, you know, a non-consensual situation, just talk about, oh, that seems to be, you know, you talk about boundaries. If you use those opportunities to have very little conversations, you know, you make it much more effective and much easier for you as well. But definitely, if those conversations never happen at home, it's very unlikely that they're going to come to you with those questions in the future. So, you know, the same as with any other areas in life, or, you know, we need to start those conversations and, you know, make them aware that they can come to us.
You saying that made me remember something. It's a really silly analogy, but at university, I had a choice. I could either do a dissertation, which I did not want to do. 10,000 words, like, scared the shit out of me. And it's a huge, monumental task. 10,000 words. What do you say for 10,000 words? Or write 10 1,000-word essays. And that's what I chose to do. I got an A. I passed that module on my course. I was happy as Larry. And if I'd have sat there, trying to sit there and write 10,000 words about the branding of Marks and Spencer's caterpillar cakes, I would have gone absolutely fucking mental. I don't think I could have done it. And it seemed like such a huge monumental task. But by choosing to do 10 individual essays on branding and looking at the branding of 10 individual companies and looking at it and breaking it down, the colours and fonts and all of that sort of stuff, made it so much easier. So by having those smaller little conversations, actually, absolutely, you save having to do the big conversation at the right time, and you're setting your child up to win. You're giving them all the bits of information they need in easy bite-sized chunks that they're going to be able to use and go ahead and do life with, aren't you?
So absolutely. I absolutely loved your analogy. I might actually use it at some point. I love it, but it is the truth. Like, everything, you know, if we, you know, we do sometimes to-do list and things like that, right? And it is because we try to make us, you know, make it easy for us as well. So absolutely, 1 minute conversations, definitely the way to go.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today, Marisol. I hope that we've given my listeners some food for thought. But if they are now thinking, right, I need to be having these 1 minute conversations, these quick conversations with my child, where can they come to find that inspiration? How do we find you on your Instagram?
So you can find me as the Sex Ed Mum, and you'll find, hopefully, interesting, informative, but also fun information. Because yes, as we said before, we need to make it a bit more engaging, a bit more fun. So hopefully everyone can find little tricks and bits to, you know, have those small conversations rather than, you know, waiting for that big moment.
No, amazing. And if you guys do feel like you need some coaching, you need some hand holding, you need Marisol's guidance on what to do and how to do it, then do reach out to her, slide into those DMs in that kind of way, and get in touch. But thank you all so much for joining me again this week.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure having you, Marisol.
If you enjoyed this episode of Mum's Work and Chaos, please make sure to subscribe on whatever podcasting channel you're listening on at the moment. Or if you'd like to get involved, feel free to email me at mumsworkandchaos@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @mumsworkandchaos. See you then.